back to tax matters, could you tell the court, summarize the communications you have with Mr. Morad?
At this point, we contacted Mr. Morad because...
When you say at this point?
At or about October 15.
Okay.
We were employed in the case, and I don't recall the exact date, somewhere around May. We were tasked by the trustee to do an investigation of numerous transactions, even dating back to the inception of the company. It took us 3 or 4 months to get through that analysis to prepare the typical exhaustive avoidance action lists for preferences and fraudulent transfers, and completed that work sometime in the August-September range, and then began the process of focusing on taxation and financial reporting. And at that point, contacted Mr. Morad up before this letter by a couple of phone calls going back and forth, and since that time as well.
Okay, and did you receive any response to Exhibit 27?
No.
Okay. I refer you to the document marked for identification as Exhibit 28 and ask you if you can identify that document.
I can. That was, I don't know whether I had a tickler or whatever, but having not heard from Mr. Morad, I believe it's almost exactly 3 weeks, I then sent a second letter to reestablish a contact in order to meet to discuss the various areas brought up in the October 15 letter.
Did you cause that letter to be sent to Mr. Morad in the ordinary course of the mails?
I did.
I would offer that document as an exhibit, Your Honor.
Any objection? You're not going to make the same objection you made the last time? You can make it. I'm going to overrule it. The objection is overruled. Document is admitted. 28 is admitted.
Okay. Exhibit 28 closed by saying, please call as soon as possible. I expect to hear from you very soon. Do you recall when you next heard from Mr. Morad or anyone acting on behalf of Mr. Morad?
Well, only by virtue of reviewing the documentation.
That refreshes your recollection as to when that was and how that was?
There's a letter dated November 18, 1996.
Okay. You're referring to the document previously marked for identification as number 29?
Yes.
And what is the document marked 29?
It's a letter that I sent to Mr. Morad summarizing a teleconference that he and I had on Friday, November 15. The letter I wrote was the following Monday, which outlined the various areas that we discussed that I wanted to put in writing to make sure there was no misunderstanding.
What in particular did you want to put in writing to make sure there was no misunderstanding?
The time frame by which we would have an opportunity to review documents that Mr. Morad allegedly had that were important for tax issues. Would be, and then to just review the various books and records of the debtor to make sure there was nothing further that I would need to prepare a tax return, and probably most important would have been to continually inform him that he was going to be responsible for the income tax consequences of the debtor, both pre-filing, post-filing, and at all times up until the time the company ceases to exist.
So in paragraph 3 of the document, Mark 29, where it says, again, I highly recommend, you had previously recommended to Mr. Morad that he consult tax and accounting experts?
Yes.
Here, I would offer Exhibit 29.
Objection?
Yes, Your Honor.
On the basis?
I don't recall that.
All right, but he's testifying that he sent it. I'll admit it.
Refer you to the document marked for identification as 30. Are you able to identify that document?
I am.
And what is that?
That is a letter that I received from Stephen Slavin, first by facsimile on November 20th, 1996, and then a day or two later in the ordinary course of getting the mail, I received a return request certified mail copy of this letter.
Had you had any previous contact with Mr. Slavin?
No.
Had you provided him the October 15th and November 18th letters?
No.
And on November 20, he asked for an extension of time with respect to compiling the material you requested, is that correct?
Yes.
And did you have conversations with Mr. Slavin thereafter, after November 20, 1996?
Numerous.
Over what period of time?
Through, I believe, up somewhere in the March to May 1997 time period.
And having in mind the issues that are being heard today, did you have any conversations with respect to those issues during that period of time with Mr. Slavin?
Yes.
Could you summarize those conversations for the record, please?
We were working on trying to establish what the correct taxable income of V&M Management for calendar years 1995 and 1996 in order to prepare the returns. In bankruptcy, obviously, just like in anyone preparing a return, we do the best we can to get them accurate. Mr. Moret had information that we were not privy to because he alleged that he made disbursements on behalf of the corporations, and we were, the information that we had, we gave to Mr. Slavin. He reviewed it, and we came to an understanding of what the 1995 and 1996 taxable income was sometime in the, again, April, May of 1997 range.
So you provided him information, at least as your tentative conclusions with respect to the income for 95 and 96 in the April or May time frame?
The 1995 was actually provided to him in the first time in December of 1996. Again, in December of 1996. Then again, updated slightly in January of 1997, and then both 1995 and 96 information were finalized in April or so in 1997.
You gave him your best available information regarding the tax information he needed to represent Mr. Moret, is that correct?
By that time, we had the exact numbers that went into the tax return.
He would have been able to file his tax returns based upon those numbers had he chosen?
We gave him good faith estimates back in October or November of 1996. So he would have known even back then in order for him to do his estimates or file tax returns. We simply provided the exact information in April.
April of 97. Okay, but those are pre-sale.
These are the case filed on January 6th of 1996. So the 1995 year had closed, but had not the
96 years, but not the 97.
Correct.
Do you recall when you gave him the 97 information?
The 97 information was probably not finalized. I believe it was like in August of 1997, and we would have sent him the K-1 at that point. I don't recall our actual correspondence, but I believe we had to discuss a little bit because we did a lot of work having to go back and re-figure what was the basis of these assets from the beginning of the corporation's existence in 1981. We had all of those tax returns, all of those work papers. Mr. Murad was, we did make inquiries of him. I even met with Mr. Monroe to ensure that we had a complete understanding of everything that had taken place as it related to the basis, which was so important to filling out and completing tax returns. Exactly what took place, I can't be sure because there was much less contention because we had controls of the books and records. We knew cash receipts. We knew tax disbursements. The only issue was what was the basis of the assets in order to calculate the various capital gains. So he would have been aware we were working on this, but he didn't get the final numbers likely until about August of 1997 because that's when we had the final numbers.
Well, when did the sale take place?
Excuse me, August of 1998, I apologize. The sale took place on, I think, December 31 of 1997. So it was in 1998 that he would have received those K-1s and that information.
Is a shareholder of a subchapter S corporation responsible for filing his or her own tax returns?
Personal tax returns?
Yes, personal tax returns.
Every person that has income, including the sole shareholder or any shareholder, would be responsible for their own income tax returns.
Does the absence of a K-1 have anything to do with relieving an individual from filing a tax return?
No.
Or obtaining an extension?
No.
And are there means available for getting extensions from the IRS?
Yes.
And what are they?
I believe every single year the IRS mails returns out to individuals. Every single post office in the country I'm aware of has tax returns. There are federal buildings in Boston that has tax returns and extensions. There's websites now. I don't recall if there was websites then. Every library has the forms They are widely available. The IRS every year has scattered around Boston and in different communities, actual IRS tax workshops. There are the CPA societies, both national and state, provide services.
My question was more, there are a series of extensions one can get, isn't that correct?
For an individual, there are two. The first is on April 15th. You can request an extension, which is an automatic extension of time until August 15th of that of the subsequent year to file a return. If by August 15th the taxpayer is not prepared to file a complete and accurate return, you can ask for a subsequent extension. That extension has to be granted by the Internal Revenue Service, and that would carry through to October 15th of the following year.
And unfortunately, in order to get an extension, or even if you get an extension, you're required to pay the taxes, is that correct?
An extension is only to file the return. The tax has to be paid as of April 15th. And even if it's paid April 15th, it could still be subject to penalties for failing to file estimates. So the extension is for filing the return only, not for paying the tax.
And you testified previously that there are penalties and interest with respect to both the failure to file and the failure to pay, is that correct?
Correct.
I think that's all I have. Thank you.
Any questions for
yes.
Mr. Java? Only on the subject that we was just discussing.
Correct.
Mr. Java, you mentioned you met or you put a conversation with my accountant, Stephen Slavin.
Correct.
And you're waiting for him to provide you the records for 1995. For the transactions, for the money that I have taken and put it all together for you. Am I correct?
I'm not sure I understand the question, but I can
You were waiting for him to provide all the records in order for you to balance the account for 1995 for BNM management.
I was waiting for him to give me certain records that either he or you would have had in your possession that the trustee would not have had in his possession, nor would I have had in my possession.
Well, obviously, Mr. Slavin came in 2 years later. He didn't have any BNM records at all. The records...
He would have got those records from you.
I did not have them. We had them from the attorney, Harold Murphy. The examiner report clearly states that the transaction was completed. And we read it this morning. Harold Murphy, on his transcript, said, Your Honor, we do have the payable, it's 3 inches thick, but it's all documented. And Stephen Gray must have had it from his... So why are you saying that we were going to go out and be responsible to look for the records when they're already in the possession of the debtor's attorney?
Let's separate the bankruptcy issues from the tax issues.
But those are my personal. That's why
we're going to present. Wait, hold on. You don't get to argue with the witness. You asked him a question. He's answering it as best you can. You don't have to like his answer. You don't have to agree with his answer. You just have to listen to his answer.
In the analysis that was initially started by the examiner, and whether you worked with the examiner or not, that analysis said that certain payments were made to Alphonse Morad or some affiliates or relatives. In addition, it had certain deposits that were put back into the company that you wanted to offset properly so against the advances that were made to you personally and to friends, family, and affiliates. On that schedule, there was also a number for $171,000, give or take, that was allegedly for amounts of money for deductible business expenses paid on behalf of V&M management by you or your family. As a tax preparer, I can't even begin to figure out what those deductions would be until someone told me what they were. All I saw was expenses paid by El Morad, $171,000. I request of you initially, and then subsequently of Mr. Slavin, to provide me any support that you would have in order for me to make my own independent judgment as the tax preparer as to what those expenses were, how they would be characterized on a tax return, and if they were deductible at all. That was some of the information that Mr. Slavin was to provide. The bulk of the information that Mr. Slavin and I were working with was mostly the records that I had, that we were making sure that he understood what I had, and I understood what he had, and I was trying to be fair to everybody, to get a meeting of the minds as to what the corporate income tax was going to be, because as I told you, even as early as October of 1996, it was going to be a very large number. And then as the days were moving on and the case was crystallizing, I knew what the tax liability that the sale was going to provide a tax liability. So you and I and Mr. Slavin talked extensively on numerous times on the information that was necessary to file returns, on the result of that analysis that I did, and what I thought was going to be the taxable income of this company, and who was going to be responsible for the taxes.
Well, for your knowledge, these records you mentioned from 1984 till 1995, they had a duplicate set right at VNM Management site office, and that's how the examiner was able to go to every audit and relate to every year from 1984 till 1996. The trustee, Stephen Gray, did have access to all the records. They were on the office, and therefore, on September the 24th, Mr. Gilbert, Paul Moore, when he cross-witnessed you, and I was looking for it, he asked you where the tax would, the taxes timed filing, timely filed. And you said it wasn't for 96 and 97, but he could file 98, 97, 98, and 99. Well, it's clearly today, looking at the dates, they were all late. So that's totally contradictory what you said, that you have done your work within 3 days and they were on timely matter. They were not.
Are you asking him a question?
You're right, Your Honor. You had the record for 1995 at the office, and the trustee did have access to the record, and the debtor's attorney had the records, and they've been verified on April 1st from the Judge Kenner, and there was no dispute of the record was 100% complete and would have been completed within 2-3 weeks if the bankruptcy court had approved Bob Moreau to be paid for it. Now, whatever reason...
Sir, are you asking him a question or are you making a statement?
Okay, did you receive a record from Stephen Gray for 1995, complete?
Stephen Gray was the Chapter 11 trustee in this case. I don't know what the legal implications are, that I'll let others decide that, but at a minimum, I think he had the custody and control of the records. I went to the building. I had an opportunity to have all the records. But what we're focusing on here, and the only reason that I had, one of the reasons that I wanted to talk to Mr. Slavin was to get information from Mr. Slavin that would have been beneficial to you. Absent getting documentation to support those $171,000 of deductions, your taxable income would have been $171,000 higher. Those records were not, by your own admission, that was information that you had because you personally made those payments. Those were not made through V&M's checkbooks. They were not made by V&M or any of its agents. They were made by you or your family individually, and you were trying to get a credit. And I was willing to give you that credit as a tax preparer, but you had to provide support. Stephen Gray or myself did not have any custody or control of the records of your personal finances, only of V&M's.
Well, it looks like V&M spent $100,000 wasted. The examiner did the same investigation.
Sure. Ask him a question.
Okay. I think I'm done. This is small.
Thank you.
It's no need for
Thank you. Let me ask you a question or two, Mr. Chalmers.
Yes, Your Honor.
You had discussions with Mr. Slavin. Well, first, before I lose it because... I will. Did you ever get the information to back up the $171,000 to permit you to include those deductions?
It was good enough for government work. I didn't get everything I wanted, but at the end of the day, he got all the deductions.
So by you pursuing those, you were able to...
Satisfy yourself and take
deductions that by the records that were at the company, you would not be able to do. And if you hadn't asked, you wouldn't have known.
Correct.
And you wouldn't have been able to take. Okay. Next question. You had discussions with Mr. Slavin about the V&M tax return. He was interested because he was representing Mr. Moran and he knew there would be impact on him personally. Is that right?
Among others, yes.
Did he know that V&M was a subchapter S?
He did.
He did. He was representing the sole shareholder. He knew then the implications of the pass-through.
He absolutely knew the implication of the pass-through, and I informed him that, to be sure, because while there are a lot of very good CPAs and accountants everywhere, the subject of bankruptcy actually is a fairly rare existence for many CPAs. So I informed him of the certainty that Mr. Murad would be personally responsible to make sure that he was aware of that as well. And I don't recall him having any different opinion than I did. I even pointed him to a bankruptcy court opinion in this first district that I believe supported that.
A question. That was you, the discussions you've testified to with were with respect to 1995, 1996. I think you said the sale took place at the end of 97, and that information wasn't given to Mr. Slavin or to Mr. Moret till 98. But did Mr. Slavin know during these communications that you were having with him about earlier tax years that there was a sale in the offing?
Yes, he was aware of that. Now, he probably never, to be honest, I had contact through to him through approximately April of 1998 to get the years, no, April of 1997. At that time, the plan was crystallizing. I had some idea what the capital gain was going to begin to look like. I informed him at that time what an estimate would be, but I don't believe, whether he ceased representing Mr. Murad, whatever, he fell off the radar screen of the case.
And that was the end of the year.
And that was my end of my contact with him.
But it's important, though, for me to understand that as far as, because Mr. Murad's tried to tell me that he didn't know that he was going to have these tax implications and until he got the K-1. But I think what you just told me was the person who was advising him during this Chapter 11 knew there was going to be a sale, may not have known the exact numbers, but at least had a heads up as to where the ballpark that might be happening was.
Correct. And even in his November 20th letter to me, he acknowledges the receipt of the two letters that I had, two of the letters that I had sent to Mr. Murad that I never sent to Mr. Slavin. So the only way he could have got them would have been through Mr. Murad. And in those letters, I state specifically that I think that Mr. Murad, as the sole shareholder, is going to be responsible for the tax. I even gave an estimate of the
400,000 number,
yes,
that I read in.
That's the 1995 number. And
okay.
So even as early as November of 1986, Mr. Slavin and Mr. Murad
96.
Of 96.
I know it feels like 20 years, but
we're
it's
clearly
really
aware
to
of what was going to happen in 1995, and by April of 1997. Knew the same thing was going to happen in 1996, except for even bigger numbers. And then we talked about the parameters of where things might be in 1997, but even I didn't know because the numbers were not set. But he was fully aware that there was going to be a large gain upon the sale of the assets upon in confirmation.
Okay. Very well. Mr. Moore, anything further?
No, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jalbert. You may step down. Can I get those four exhibits back to my deputy, please? Any further witnesses, Mr. Moore?
No, Your Honor.
All right, the records show that the trustee rests. All right. I've admitted 27, 28, 29, 30, and 31. Okay. Gentlemen, feel the need to. Seems to me we've been having final argument for the last 3 or 4 hours, and I recognize, and I'll put on the record for any appeals court that ever wants to read it, if they do, that I was very lenient, or tried to be with you, sir.
You were
to permit you to argue and testify, and I'm sure that put a burden on Mr. Moore that he didn't appreciate me doing. And if there is an appeal, and it may be his. He'll be complaining about that. But I'll give you each 5 minutes to give me the high points of what you want me to think about and look at, and then I'm gonna retire to my chambers and see whether I can give you a quick decision. If I can, I'll let you know in a very few minutes. If not, I'll let you know and you can go on your way. So Mr. Moore, I'll give you the last word, Mr. Moore. I'll give you 5 minutes, Mr. Moore, if you feel you want to use all of it.
Sure, thank you, Your Honor.
Well, Your Honor, I guess our position would be that BAP remanded on two narrow issues, whether Mr. Gray administered the estate negligently or causing Mr. Morad's tax liability or increasing it, and whether Mr. Morad asserted his claim in a timely fashion. I think obviously he did. It was a motion to file a late claim, so by its own title, it wasn't timely. It's his burden to show cause for filing the claim. I think the evidence we presented shows that there was no such cause presented by Mr. Morad, that He was aware of everything that was going on in the case. He had tax people advising him. He was aware it was a subchapter S corporation. He caused it to be a subchapter S corporation. So he should have been aware of the consequences, and any failure was entirely his own. I had more substantial notes, so if I just quickly look through them, I'd move along more quickly. I think we've noted at any number of points that this was Mr. Morad's election, that Mr. Morad retained that election throughout the whole process, and at any point could have acted to terminate it and chose not to. Neither Mr. Gray nor Mr. Jalbert did anything to prevent him to do that. With respect to the substantive taxes, as I recall, Mr. Jalbert testified as to what caused those taxes to be incurred. And again, my recollection is the two principal bases for the taxes were the distribution that he took in, I believe it was 1994, I may be wrong on the year, but Mr. Morad refinanced the property, distributed over $900,000 to himself as a distribution, which he later chose to recharacterize as a loan. Mr. Jalbert testified that under applicable law, IRS law, interest is imputed at a statutory rate if no interest is paid, and that interest continued to accrue with respect to that unpaid loan from year to year and was added to the principal balance. So a significant portion of the income that Mr. Morad suffered was as a result of the benefit he received in terms of the distribution or the loan. The other principal basis of the tax liability was, as I recall, the difference between the sale of the property. And the principal reason for the increase for the tax was the fact the property had been depreciated and that Mr. Morad had the benefit of that depreciation. I think in his own testimony, I think he mentioned that he took those benefits from year to year. Mr. Jalbert, I believe at one point, was asked what the amount of depreciation was, and he said, as I recall, I don't recall it all, but at least on one building it was $1 million. Excuse me. So as to the principal amount of the tax, that was attributable to the subchapter S election and to the benefits he received as the beneficiary of the subchapter S corporation. As to the interest and penalties, that was a function of his own failure to pay and file. So that's our position.
Thank you. Mr. Morad, you have 5 minutes.
So, issue number one, Your Honor, from day one, when Stephen Greer was appointed on April 1st, he's intentionally, deliberately devalued the property for $100,000. That shocked all the creditors. Second, the appraisal value of that development at that time was on record for $12 million, and I could at that time get a commitment up to $9 million to pay the creditors 100% on the dollar and still maintain my ownership today. As far as the S Corporation, yes. Did I want to keep it? Absolutely. It has benefits to the sole shareholder and to the creditors, because I had losses from PREA for legal whatever, now $900,000, which I was going to regain at the sale on the future when the property became valuable. Now, we all know the real estate of Boston in 1996, we are the highest in the country, 276 units. The city of Boston assessed the land alone with no building on it, Your Honor, for $10 million.
Is that in the record, sir?
Yes, it's part of my exhibit witness.
An admitted exhibit or a proposed exhibit?
I'm not sure.
I'll look for it. Okay, thank you.
So I was paid assessment on the land alone for $10 million. Second, as I was told by the attorneys with tax laws, says that Stevie Gray did have an obligation in 1995 to file for the tax credits under V&M management and a sole shareholder, because that is valuable. That is an asset of $12 million above the purchase price. As you can see, I already had an agreement.
All right, what is in the record? What evidence is in the record with respect to the value of those tax credits, are that Mr. Gray had a responsibility to file for them? not what you wish, not what you hope, not what you think, evidence.
I'm not sure if it's here. I know it's been evidence on the IRS tax case, the lawyers. I'm not an attorney. I did the best I could as a pro se. But I know that's been part of the negligence on Stephen Gray, that the tax credit belonged to B&M in 1995. And Stephen Gray had an obligation in order to enhance the assets to the creditors and the still shareholder to file on behalf of B&M management as well as the sole shareholder. If he has done that, then today Beacon would not be able to own the property without joining partner with me. That's the way I understand it.
Okay.
So my liability right now exceeds $500,000. I lost 15 years of my life. The property today, and I think which will be investigated in the future, will be sold in excess of $45, $50 million counter conversion. And that's what I think the prediction is. I believe that there's no Section 8 renewal, that tennis will be dismantled, and that will be part of the gentrification for Boston, and will make history. We might not win this case or the appeal, but I think there is history in the making here regarding Boston Redevelopment Authority and gentrification in the City of America. And I'm a victim to that, and I'm sure there's many owners victim to that, and it's about policy. And I don't blame any judge what they have to do because the law is limited. So that's clear in my case, and I think that I should be able to be entitled to get my property back or be able to cut a deal with Beacon Management and to say, okay, Mr. Moran, let's keep the tax credit, keep the tenants happy, and we can have a workout agreement. I remember one time Judge King did that on the Shamsie case, and I had a $5 million fine. And when the backroom deal was in front of him, he told Mr. Shamsie and me, my attorneys and me, take 5 minutes and discuss a settlement before you come over, because I think this case is going toward Mr. Moran if you continue. Mr. Shamsie did, and Judge King awarded me the $50,000, and he did agree that the fact that time elements was not an issue because of the delay of the BLA and the City of Boston and the state.
Well, the one thing that I want to ask you about, because you've suggested it several times, and I didn't hear any evidence whatsoever, and since there may have been tenants here, there may be tenants here, I want to make sure that I understand what you're telling me. You're telling me that you, as part of this vast conspiracy that you perceive, is to get the tenants out and either tear down or rehab this into a condo project.
Correct.
Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
Did I hear any evidence of that other than your supposition that that's the underlying basis of what's going on here?
To be honest with you, I do have quite a bit inside, but I...
You may have it. Did I hear any
no,
of it?
I didn't feel it was relevant. I thought...
I don't think it's relevant either, but I want to... I mean, I don't want people going
problem.
Back to the neighborhood and saying that that what you say is true. Because I don't know whether it's true or not. But I don't want there to be a panic in 270 households tonight because you think there may be some conspiracy to throw these people out.
Well,
and you didn't give me any evidence of that, so let's go on to something you gave me evidence of. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but it isn't anything I've heard about today.
Your Honor, I agree with you, and you are correct.
Fine, then move on.
And what I'll do this evening, I told Santa over to the residents, I'm throwing my boxes away. I will give them all the information.
Give whoever you want whatever information you want, but don't let it come out of this court. And let anybody think that you produced any evidence whatsoever to cause a reason for panic or concern about the people that live there, because it just isn't so.
The Section 8 for this year has not been renewed.
And that may be. I didn't hear any evidence on that either.
I said,
but you stand up here and you just make glib comments, and it may affect people's lives. And you've told me what a tragedy this is for your,
I know,
and you and your family. I don't want another tragedy to take place of people to lose sleep over something you've said here today without any backup or any evidence of it. So move on to something.
I apologize, Your Honor. I thought it was not relevant. You were not going to allow me to submit it in.
I probably wouldn't have, but you've made these comments, which I don't think are relevant at all. And if people are upset or nervous about it, to the extent that I have anything to say about it, I'm saying I have not heard any evidence that indicates that what you've suggested is possible or true, and you agree with me.
You're innocent to it. No,
so finish up.
And it's not much more I can say.
Fine. Thank you. All right, I'm going to take 5 minutes, and I'll let you know whether I'm going to make my decision today or I'll take the matter under advisement. Thank you.
Second.
All right, I had hoped, back on the record, I had hoped that I would be able to give you my decision today, but looking at my notes and the volume of testimony and the volume of exhibits, I think I want to take a little more time. I think both sides are entitled to that, given the amount of time and effort that went into this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take such time as I feel is necessary. I don't think it certainly won't be a matter of months. It may be a matter of a week or two. What I usually do in these situations is I will let the two sides know that, and we could do it by telephone, that I'm going to read my findings and rulings into the record. You both, I'll arrange a conference call with the two sides, and I'll do that. Probably won't be next week for two reasons. One, I expect we're going to be in the World Series and we're going to be very busy. Two, I'm going to be out of town for 3 days next week, so probably the week after. We'll give you enough time, we'll let you know. Do we have your phone number, Mr. Mora? If not, don't put it on the record, give it to the deputy after.
I don't have one. I don't know what I'll be. What's the Schenectady yesterday?
Excuse me?
What's the Schenectady yesterday? I don't have any mobile.
Okay, well, then...
I have an email, though.
Well, all right, then after we're done, give the deputy, make sure she has a right email and a right address for you. And I will take care of this as quickly as I can, but I do want to spend the time that's necessary to review the records. I want to thank you. Mr. Moret, you should have gone to law school.
Yeah.
You did very well representing yourself. With a little more training, you would have made an excellent lawyer. I want to thank Mr. Moore and Ms. Hertz for their tolerance of me bending over backwards to try to help you.
Regardless, I want to thank you. I appreciate the fact that you came to Boston knowing that it was difficult for me to go to Worcester. And I really take that.
I understood that. I understand this is a Boston case, and I don't mind trying to accommodate our customers here in the bankruptcy court. Thank you all. This case is adjourned. All right, as soon as the court was clear, I'll come out and clear this stuff up.